The Musician's Map ebook is the new definitive guide on building success in music. Whether you're just starting out, or you're looking for gigs, or you're trying to make a career, the Musician's Map ebook is right for you. The Musician's Map ebook contains 20 years of music industry experience distilled into a 40,000 word guide to achieving your goals in music. Can't read? Get the Musician's Map audiobook. 4.5 hours of author Kane Power speaking directly into your own ears. That's right, even you can still benefit from the Musician's Map Guide to Building Success in Music. Head to musiciansmap.org/books right now to get your copy of the Musician's Map ebook or audiobook. Get it today and receive a special one-time-only offer of a personal pat on the back from author and podcast personality Kane Power. The Musician's Map ebook and audiobook is also available at Amazon and Audible if you feel like supporting those giant websites as well. The Musician's Map ebook, your guide to building success in music. Proof of purchase required for pat on the back. To receive a pat on the back, you must travel to Raglan, New Zealand. Travel not included in purchase price. Welcome to the Musician's Map podcast. One of the intentions of the podcast is to act as a platform for sharing knowledge and experience about music and the music industry. And as long-time listeners will know, a great way to do that is by having guests on the podcast to talk about their path in music and share their experiences. Which kind of, by default, makes me seek out people of a certain age. People who've been around for a while and have had a variety of experiences. Somehow, the amount of time they've spent in the music industry lends weight to their opinions. Now, I'm not ageist, and I definitely believe that it's important to hear opinions and experiences from musicians of all ages. But when you're looking for advice, it's easy to neglect the younger members of our industry, as quite often they just haven't had the years of experience that older people have. Which is not the case for my guest this week. I'm talking to Henry De Jong from New Zealand metal band Alien Weaponry. Alien Weaponry formed in 2010 at the ages of 10 and 12. At an age when most kids are spending their time riding bikes and skateboards and listening to whatever is on the radio or what their parents are playing at home, Henry and Lewis were playing thrash metal. Since then, they've spent the last 8 years slowly taking over the New Zealand metal scene. They've won 2 national youth music competitions, the Rock Quest and Pacifica Beats. They've opened for some of the country's biggest bands, and they were nominated for a New Zealand Music Award. Their unique blend of metal and te reo Māori have seen them attract massive media attention locally and overseas, and has led to the band signing management and booking deals ahead of 2018 festival appearances at Varken, Download, Hellfest, and more. And to top it all off, their debut album, which is out June 1st, is being released through Napalm Records. I caught up with Henry over Skype.
The first song I learned all the way through on drums was Play That Funky Music by Wild Cherry. I wouldn't list that as a musical inspiration, but that was the first song I learned on drums. I learned it at school, so it was what started off my drumming. But as far as kind of early drumming inspiration goes, there was War Pigs by Black Sabbath. I got really into playing a lot of Metallica stuff probably in the first couple of years I was drumming. So Master of Puppets was a big one. I played a lot of that and other songs on the album. In fact, Blackened, I learned that was a really fun one to play. Then kind of from there, I started learning Lamb of God songs and doing Rage Against the Machine. And but yeah, I mean, this was over a few years. Like, it wasn't.
Yeah, just, I was going to say, yeah. Lamb of God's a bit of a step up.
Yeah, yeah.
Funky music.
Yeah, just a little.
Yeah, tiny. How about the formation of Alien Weaponry? When did you guys, had you been jamming together for a few years and then just sort of went, oh, we should probably call it a thing now and be a band? Or sort of how did that happen?
Well, I mean, as you probably know, me and Lewis are brothers. So we had grown up together, playing together, you know, pretty much always at age 3 was the first time Lewis picked up a guitar. So he was kind of drawn to that. And in 2010, we just decided we'd make a band. We had a kind of, it was sort of a song, like, I'm not too proud of it, but it was a song that yeah. we'd written, and we had a family friend who was a photographer / videographer, and she wanted to, you know, just do a little video for us, make a music video. So we ended up recording this song and making a music video to it. And
it's on YouTube.
It is actually still up on YouTube, believe it or not, because
oh mate, what's it called?
It's called 80th Death. And
80th Death.
80th Death. Yeah. Yep. It's absolutely horrible, but it kind of shows how far we come. So yeah, that's kind of how we started. Was just in the lounge, jamming, playing that one song, and then from there, we ended up moving to Waipu, where we met Ethan, and we entered RockQuest and started writing songs. And, you know, kind of a few years into that, we met Tom and, you know, really got into that whole songwriting process as far as songwriting for an actual album and, you know, producing material at the level that a professional band would.
Something that's really unique about Alien Weaponry is that you guys, you kind of put yourselves forward as yourselves. And it's something that's not entirely unique in metal, but you guys take it a step further, speaking in your own kind of voice. And I want to sort of talk to you a little bit about that, mainly because, you know, a lot of people will have an idea of what they should be when they're making music.
Yeah.
And they'll try and sort of replicate that idea rather than looking at themselves and thinking about who they really are and making the best music that they can in order to appeal to people who are like them. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you're talking about.
How did you avoid the lure of being, well, we like Metallica, let's make songs like Metallica?
There's always going to be inspiration from other bands and, you know, outside sources, you know, people thinking that you should be, you know, incorporating this or that in your songwriting. And I think, really, if you're writing songs, they are going to be yours. But if you're having to force the songs out and, you know, they're not coming easily because you're kind of struggling with something, say, oh, I don't know whether this will work because I don't think it's enough like this. That's kind of, that's the point where you need to kind of stop and say, am I writing something that flows for me, that I like, that, you know, I'm inspired by? Because in the end, like, whenever we write songs, we're always writing them because they just flow when we jam, because that's how we write songs, is we just, you know, we kind of play whatever comes to our head rather than sitting down and methodically writing a song. You know, we'll take a riff that we like and then we'll kind of structure it into a song, but we kind of always start off with just these ideas that we float around. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to be the correct way of writing music, because I think there's no correct way of writing music. You know, everyone finds it easier to do it one way or another way. But
yeah,
just for us, it works like that. So
To me, it seems obvious that the success that you guys have found is through writing music that's uniquely you. And especially New Zealanders, but as people everywhere, obviously, can kind of see it, you know, and it's authentic is what I'm getting at. And people appreciate authenticity.
Oh, thank you.
Your dad is your manager for New Zealand and Australia. So let's talk about that relationship, man. How does that work and when did it start?
It kind of started, you know, when we formed the band, and he said, do you guys actually want to take this seriously and try and keep this going as a long-term project? And you know, at the time we were like, hell yeah. And so if I were to say it was strange having your dad as a manager, it would kind of be lying, because we've never had anyone else as a manager. So it's, you know, for us, it's just normal, and it's, you know, it's what we're used to. So as far as we're concerned, he's done a bloody excellent job up to this point.
Yeah.
I think it makes things quite a bit easier when he lives in the same house as you, and, you know, you're trying to do all the communication, and you know, the people are right there. Like, you're not having to email and text and, you know, a whole bunch of bullshit like that.
Yeah, have a WhatsApp group or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, and is it kind of like a father-son perspective? Does it ever cross kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of become the father-son relationship almost. So Dad is the manager. Like, he's never not the manager, but then again, he's never not Dad, so...
Yeah, and you are also managed in the rest of the world pretty much, newly, by Dust Machine. Man, how did that happen? Talk me through that.
Well, Neil is part of the MMF, which is the manager's forum here. And at one of the meetings, him and Lewis were there, and they met a guy called Oliver Kramer, who, he's not actually part of Dust Machine as such, or he wasn't back then, but he knows the guy who set it up, Nico, very well. And, you know, they got talking, and, you know, he kind of contacted Nico and said, hey, I've got these guys, they're in a metal band, they sing in Māori, would you be interested in managing them? And Nico came back saying that he was really keen. So pretty much from there, he kind of made this offer to us. And, you know, there was a little bit of contracts and paperwork and whatnot that we had to go through, but, you know, they were offering a really good deal for us, and I mean, they seem really keen, and like they were genuinely interested in taking us on board as a band that, you know, they had a passion for, rather than, you know, just to make more money.
Sure.
Because that's something we've always tried to be a little bit careful of, is that whether it be labels, touring agencies, or management, we're never signing to them if we don't feel that they've got a passion for what we're doing and, you know, can kind of get behind our stuff as much as we do. So, yeah. And I think, you know, all the contact we had from them was really good and really positive, so we went ahead with that. And, yeah, at the time, I think we are still their only metal band. They mostly manage hip-hop artists, you know, like a lot of rap groups over in Germany. So it's strange, because it's like being the only metal band on a management company is not normally something you see, eh?
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool, though. Like, and especially, as you say, like, it's the most important thing is that you're getting the right vibes from them, and they know that it's a good relationship, and you kind of feel comfortable that they're representing your interests, and it's kind of all you can ask for, really. It doesn't really matter who else they've got, I suppose.
Well, me, Lewis, and Ethan, all of us do actually listen to rap and, you know, quite enjoy, you know, a lot of rap music. So I think for us, we can see that they're doing well with their artists, you know, their other artists that they're managing, and the stuff their other artists are producing is actually good. And, you know, because really that is a good way to gauge a management company or a record company, is to look at the other artists that they're signing and, you know, go off that.
True. So what about Tom Larkin? When did you start working with him? How did that relationship start?
I think that was about 3 years ago now. Carl heard us on The Rock. For some reason, I ended up doing an interview on The Rock just after Papa Roach, I think, and Carl, the bassist, heard it and, you know, heard that we were at Westfest. He was at Westfest. And so after everything, he came out the gates and saw our van parked like smack bang in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
That's kind of one of the things we used to do in order to kind of get a bit of traction, is go to things like Westfest and park our sign-written van right in front. So he came up and had a chat to us and, you know, was saying that he'd seen us on YouTube and, you know, he kind of liked what we were doing. And he must have mentioned us to Tom, because about a week later we get this email from Tom saying, hey guys, I've heard you guys' stuff on YouTube. I was wondering if you wanted someone to help you produce some of your tracks and, you know, maybe record some stuff. And, you know, at the time we were like, shit, man, it's Tom Larkin from Shehead. Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that ended up kind of being organized, and he also offered us the support slot for Shehead, when they were doing their tour over here. So we ended up opening for them at the Power Station, and kind of after that he kind of got into the studio with us, did pre-prod for, I think it was 5 tracks he did pre-prod on in total. So, and all of those tracks are on the album. And yeah, I mean, he just kind of introduced us to this whole professional band work ethic that we kind of didn't have before.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things he got us to do was write 50 songs over the course of, I think it was about 5 or 6 weeks. So one of the things we did for the album was, you know, go through this like insanely intense session of songwriting where we just wrote and wrote and wrote all summer. And of course, when we went back to school, we were the whitest kids there. So we hadn't tanned at all. We'd spent all summer inside. Yeah, but a lot of that material is now on the album. So a huge portion of the album, I think, can be kind of credited to the way Tom pushed us and kind of helped us grow as musicians.
Yeah.
And, like, really for me, it was really helpful having him in the studio the first couple of times that we did drum recording and stuff, because I used to find it quite hard to push myself and keep pushing and keep pushing and make sure I'm playing the absolute tightest and best track that I can play. He's not a guy for tiptoeing around your feelings. Like, if you've played a really, really shit take, he will tell you. And like, he's all business, and like, it's one of the great things about him is that, you know exactly how you're doing and you know how you're going to improve, because he's also got a lot of knowledge when it comes to, you know, recording and actually drum tracking and, you know, doing a whole bunch of stuff actually. So yeah, it was really helpful having him there, like, for all that pre-prod and all the recording.
It's next level, isn't it, when you've got, you know, because as a drummer or as a musician in studio, especially recording for a long period of time, you can kind of, a little bit of your ego gets in the way and you kind of go, yeah, that was a mean take.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really happy with that. And you might get a bit tired and go, no, that one was fine. We're happy with that. You know, we'll fix it. Whereas if you've got someone else riding you going, no, that was not, you need to get that snare way tighter.
Yeah. And then they go, I want another 5 takes.
yeah, exactly. So that sort of stuff, it's just absolutely next level, isn't it?
Yeah.
Having a guy like that, especially a guy like Tom. Well, I mean, so a lot of those songs made it onto the album, which is coming out like real shortly.
Yeah, it's going to be 1st of June. It's coming out.
1st of June. So, man, it's like 2 weeks. And it comes out on Napalm Records.
Sure does.
How, man? How did, talk us through how that happened?
I mean, it's still pretty fresh for us. Like, we've only been signed for just a little under a month. So, you know, for us, it's awesome to be signed to Napalm. We were saying the other day that actually, as far as metal labels go, maybe 15 years ago, Roadrunner was the label to sign to. But right now, pretty much everyone agrees that Napalm or Nuclear Blast are the two labels to choose from if you're a metal band. So, we're absolutely stoked to have been, first, to have actually got the interest of Napalm, and second, to actually have signed with them. So it's pretty unreal. And I mean, the process of actually releasing the album has been a little less strenuous than it would have been if we'd decided to go ahead with our original plan and actually release it ourselves. Right before we signed with them, we were kind of at that point, we were like, we don't know how we're going to release this ourselves. You know, we just had kind of little to no idea of how we were going to cope with any of it and actually get the album into shops and, you know, all that hoo-ha.
Yeah.
So when Napalm came along and we partnered up, it made things a lot easier. And, you know, not only a lot easier, but with stuff like touring and stuff, part of the contract, of course, is that they support you when you go on tour, and it just makes everything easier, not just, you know, releasing records. So it's really great to be signed with Napalm.
Did they approach you guys, or was it something, were you guys looking for labels and putting kind of the feelers out?
We were looking for labels, but I do believe they approached Us Machine asking about us. So don't quote me on that though, because might be 100% wrong.
is it one of those things maybe that sort of seems like a snowball, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the first thing happens and it's kind of, we kind of feel right now that we've finally got the train rolling downhill. You know, it's been an 8-year battle uphill for us, and it's kind of finally starting to pay off, or we can see it starting to pay off.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully in the next couple of years, we're going to be able to maybe go on a tour and not have to apply for funding and be able to actually fund it ourselves off record sales or whatever. But yeah, just being able to do that, even with the funding this year, is insane for us, because I think this is something that we never would have expected, you know, 2 years ago. Like, if you'd asked us 2 years ago, where do you think you're going to be? We might have told you, oh, playing some big bars in New Zealand, you know, like 400 or 500 capacity, you know.
Yeah.
And we definitely wouldn't have said, you know, playing at Wacken.
Well, you guys are doing Wacken.
Yeah.
Mean.
Correct.
Mean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's through the label, through a booking agent.
It's mostly Dust Machine that have done a lot of the work there for us. But really the thing that kicked that all off was the guy who runs Metal Days in Slovenia contacted us on Facebook and said, hey guys, I was told about you by a friend. You know, I want you to come over and play at my festival. It's called Metal Days. And kind of we got this message and we were like, wait, what? We thought someone was legitimately like having a good joke at us, because we were like, there's no way that Metal Days want this tiny little band from New Zealand to come in and actually play at the festival. But yeah, it was fully serious, and we were kind of like, at the time, like, well, we'd need to apply for funding and you know, get some more shows over just to be able to cover the costs of flying over. And like, kind of that was as things were kind of getting sorted out with Dust Machine. We hadn't signed with Dust Machine yet. So kind of once we got signed up with Dust Machine, you know, they got involved and started reaching out to more festivals and yeah, just trying to get us on as many shows over there, you know, during the time we were over there as possible. So it's definitely snowballed from that one festival.
Have you ever been to Europe?
No, I've never even been out of New Zealand.
Dude, and your first experience is going to be going to Wacken and festivals.
Yeah, Jesus. It's going to be a little bit insane, I think.
Yeah, man, it's going to be insane. Sponsorships?
Yes.
You're Mapex and Meinl at the moment?
Yep. Well, I'm not Mapex endorsed, but I do play Mapex kits, so I have 2 drum kits. They're both Mapex. And yeah, I'm a Meinl endorsee. So
firstly, how did you get that arrangement with them?
So pretty much we contacted the Rock Shop, who obviously are the suppliers of Meinl here, and got in contact with this guy Hamish, who is he deals with most of the endorsement stuff. Yeah, he organized that quite quickly and you know, kind of just presented the idea to Meinl, said, hey, you know, these guys are doing quite well over here and the drummer is looking for a cymbal sponsor, and they came back and said, yeah. And so it's a pretty good deal as far as cymbal sponsorships go, I think. Like I said, it was just really easy and, you know, I think helped by the fact that at the time we had just released, I think it was Ruana we'd released maybe a month before, and that had, you know, over 1 million listens on Facebook and, you know, was gaining a lot of traction overseas. So I think when Meinl went and checked us out, I think they decided that we might be a good option.
yeah, totally. So they've obviously consider it and look at you and how popular you guys are and the prospect of your exposure and kind of, made the decision on that. Awesome, dude. So what about you got the album coming out in a couple of weeks, you guys are touring. at the end of the year. What else? What are you guys looking to do with the band? You know, is it going to be career, taking it to the top? What's the idea?
I mean, yeah, the idea is definitely to make it into a career for us. You know, like it as far as we can. We want to take it as far as possible. You know, so we want to keep writing songs, obviously, keep releasing records. As far as our sound goes, obviously, we'll be changing, but, you know, it's always going to be in the direction we're wanting to be going, because it definitely with Napalm and Dust Machine, we still have every bit of freedom as far as our songwriting goes. So, like, it's really good for us. We haven't had any sort of pressure to move in a specific direction from the label. It's really cool for us, and we're pretty much just going to be writing, you know, continuing to write and releasing new stuff, you know, whether we kind of stay in the same kind of old school thrash / groove metal that's still to be found out by everyone, I think, because we're constantly kind of exploring new areas of, you know, music and things that we like. So I think that's our music's gonna, it's just gonna reflect that. So for us, I think it's gonna be as exciting as when people hear, you know, whatever else we're gonna come out with.
And that's all for this week. Thanks to my guest Henry De Jong. Check out Alien Weaponry at facebook.com/alienweaponry and alienweaponry.com, and head to the Napalm Records website to pre-order their album. You'll find a link in the episode description. Henry's choice for Artist of the Week is Dirty Phonics. Check them out at facebook.com/dirtyphonics and dirtyphonics.com. Also, make sure to like the Musicians Map Facebook page at facebook.com/musiciansmap and join the Musicians Map Facebook group. This podcast and the website musiciansmap.org is dedicated to sharing knowledge and advice about music and the music industry. It's all about community, honesty, and positive progress. The experiences, stories, and advice shared on the podcast are given freely with the hope that you can relate to them and benefit from them. If you've found this podcast enjoyable or useful, make sure to check out the Musicians Map ebook and audiobook about building success in music. You'll find it at musiciansmap.org/books, Amazon, and Audible. And buying a copy of the book directly contributes to the continuation of this podcast. There's also a free ebook, How to Get Your Music Heard. Go to musiciansmap.org/free-book to get your copy. If you have a suggestion for the podcast or for the YouTube channel, or you just want to get in touch and say hello, please do so via the Musicians Map Facebook group or by email at kane@musiciansmap.org. Thanks for listening, and stay positive.